Pepsi shirt? What is that?
Oh, it's Demon's Tilt. Demon's Tilt.
I'm wearing Kaldor. Welcome to the Completely Unnecessary Podcast for March 29th of Tuesday, 2022. We've sprung forward. We're in spring. That's Ian. I'm Pat. On the show today, we'll be unboxing lots of fun. And we'll be talking about... an unboxing. PlayStation Plus revealed their tiers and prices. Breath of the Wild, and other goodness. DMCA, Bungie stuff. Fun times. You have fun this weekend, Ian?
I did. I went to a bunch of the museums in Balboa Park with Vonnie.
The Museum of Man?
No, didn't do that one this year. We did the... So we went to the Fleet Science Center, which didn't really have any like thing going on, and honestly, kind of a letdown when there's nothing going on there.
I haven't been there ever, that one.
It's small. It's definitely more aimed towards kids, and I'm sure kids have fun there, but even like looking at it from the angle of the kids, there's not like a specific exhibit there. Like, okay. I went there once before for the video game exhibit that was there for like a year and a half. Everyone talked about it.
And that was okay?
And that was okay, but yeah, this was... Whatever, kind of small. Went back to the Natural History Museum, which I love.
That's nice.
The fourth floor had an exhibit on California wildflowers and how climate change was affecting them, and that was something that was like right up my alley. We were walking by the Nat, and they had like a banner hanging outside for the exhibit, and we were like,
"Let's." I love those banners.
I was like, "I want to go do that."
I love the banners outside of history museum. I remember the Natural History Museum in New York, the big one. Have you ever been to that one?
No.
Wow, that's the one that has the famous big giant fucking elephant thing out front.
I'd love to go. I love natural history museums like that.
That was the best trips ever. The trips. From school, we went to the Natural History Museum every 2-3 years. We're always the best.
So that one was cool. And it's great to have the Balboa Park Explorers Pass because, like, these museums, you know, they're like $20 a person for admission. Yeah. The pass, you flash it, you go up to the fourth floor, you enjoy the exhibit that you want to see, and you leave.
Oh, it's a day pass for all the.
We have the year pass.
Oh.
For all of the museums at Balboa, it's called the Explorers Pass.
I should get that. Just force myself to go to the museums.
The art museum's really nice too. And then we went to the Minge International Folk Arts Museum, and that one was awesome too.
I think I was to the regular art one. I don't think it was to that one before.
So yeah, good weekend there, and then. Yeah, it was excellent. And I played a lot of Kirby, which we'll talk about shortly. What did you do?
Talk about it now if you want.
Yeah, sure.
But Kirby, how was Kirby?
Kirby and the Forgotten Land came out. And
Kirby in the bombed out mall.
And I was super excited and looking forward to this. They had shown the previews, and people were like, well, great. It's a 3D Kirby game, and this environment looks interesting, post-apocalyptic, in a Kirby way. And they introduced, in some of the previews, the new mouthful mode, which I was afraid might be too gimmicky. The mouthful mode is where Kirby inhales something and doesn't inhale it all the way, doesn't digest, and he just keeps the shape of it. So, like, he'll inhale a car, but he'll just be wrapped around the top of it very comically.
Okay.
And then you can drive the car, or he'll inhale... a big circle from like a sign, like the letter O, and then he can use it to like become an air gun or become a sail on a sailboat.
That's like an open world area.
No, the levels are pretty much defined as, I mean, they're 3D levels, but it's a 3D game, but it's pretty on rails, which is great. I was excited about that. I was kind of afraid open world Kirby wouldn't do it for me. So, the gameplay is great. The control is excellent. All of the mouthful mode stuff feels great in the levels. I actually laughed out loud a few times at some of the transformations. They're very, very funny. And the comedy just expressed in the visuals is excellent. The levels themselves are all gorgeous. I even thought the levels, like, I generally don't like sand levels, sand worlds.
You don't like sanding.
I hate sand in general.
It gets everywhere.
I hate sand. Yeah.
It's really dry.
I'm real Anakin about sand. Yeah. But even the sand levels were great. The music is fantastic.
What the fuck was this line?
Music is fantastic. The attention to detail is wild. When it's just really nice to see when Kirby jumps into the water, he gets a little rubber raft floaty around him. And if like you're using
part of his body, the raft, or no,
he's just in it.
It's just an inner tube.
He's just in an inner tube. And some of the weapons, even like if you have the bombs, if you throw the bombs, they even get like their own little inner tubes and float around. So there's a lot of detail that's really excellent to see.
Sorry,
I didn't like sand. It's coarse and rough and irritating, and it gets everywhere.
That's when I was done with episode 2. That was the moment I was done.
Was that actually him?
Yeah,
that line is so bad.
And that's one of they filmed that stuff in Italy. That those scenes of the beautiful architecture stuff. But like then you have the worst fucking beautiful scenery and the worst fucking dialogue ever put in a film. And I was done with. That's when I realized I was done with Star Wars. At least that I was done. With that romantic subplot in giant quotes.
So I think the Kirby transitioned perfectly into 3D. I loved the game enough that I saw the credits roll last night on it, and I got it Friday. Wow. So I played through.
Did you 100% it?
No. And there's obviously stuff afterwards. There's levels that opened up after the main credits. Spoiler, of course, there was only 6 worlds before the main credits roll. But yeah, go out and get it. I think it's one of the best games that's on the Switch easily. And it's just joyful. It's joyous to play it. It's a happy game.
Well, I'm happy. You're always big into Kirby. Mm-hmm. You always like it.
Big Kirby guy.
I have to point people to a GoFundMe real quickly. Trevor from Top Loaded Gaming, their house was destroyed by a tornado from Hurricane Ida. Was that last year? So they have a GoFundMe up. I'll put the link in the description. I threw a few bucks their way. If you can put a couple bucks towards them, that would be very helpful to get them back on their feet there. Trevor, I brought him up. He was one of the only interviews ever of the former CEO, Tommy Tallarico, that actually asked hard-hitting questions. This was like 2 years ago. And he actually made Tommy angry and upset and blustery because I think Tommy realized that this guy's actually asking intelligent, reasonable questions.
Right.
And it isn't just going to, virtually fillet me for the interview because I'm a quote-unquote industry legend. So I'll put the link in the chat if you're watching on YouTube or below for Trevor there. My weekend was setting up the new old iPhone X that Alex gave me. We talked about a little bit on the exclusive patreon.com/CU podcast exclusive video this week of the podcast. And I don't know, I had sort of like a recovery weekend, which has been a lot more of them recently. I'm like booking flights and getting stuff in order for the weekend. And I have this something looming over my head, and it's an N64 book that like I have to work on. April, I'm going to dive in and really work on this book. And it's like, I'm not running from it, but it's dreadful. It's like, it's over my head working on this book, which is funny. Cause like most of the hard work is done and now it's just putting it together. But it's like, I'm getting too old for it. I feel like Danny Glover. I'm getting too old for it. I'm getting too old for it. Getting too old for it, Ian.
Real quick, I want to point out, it's not on our docket, but I've been thinking about this, and we have an answer. Playdate is shipping soon.
Oh!
I was starting to wonder because they said early 2022, which to me would mean end of first quarter, and it is just about the end of quarter.
Day it is, yeah.
Yeah. So Playdate said yesterday, as we hurtle towards the end of early 2022, a quick Playdate update. Group 1's batch of brand new shiny Playdates are on their way to our fulfillment center in California as we speak. They still need to be processed and gradually shipped, but it's almost time. Thanks for your patience. We only speak when there's news, because otherwise it would be a wild roller coaster for you. Our logistics company got hacked, shipments froze, our battery factory closed for weeks because of COVID, etc., but we're working hard every single day. And then next we'll be emailing everyone in Group 1 to make sure your mailing addresses are valid. Please keep an eye out for that.
So you're in Group 1, so
I am.
You're gonna get
Matter of fact, I am checking my email right now.
I'm in that group too. I had to go to Sprouts that morning and shop. Otherwise, I would have been in group one. I just missed it. Wow, the logistics got hacked?
Yeah. It's a bummer.
Who's hacking dear old Panic over there?
Yeah.
For the Playdate? I like how they said that. Yeah, we're not going to give you an update until we know our shit's in order. Yeah. Otherwise, it turns into PR nightmares.
Yep.
Obviously, we've seen examples of that. You go the Fire Pro method. Hey, it's done. It's coming out in like 4 weeks.
Yep, exactly.
That's it. You got it. It's coming out. Yep, that's what it is.
Well, except for the most recent one, but I remember D, Z, all of those dropped super quick.
Yeah, you had no idea they're coming out. It's like,
here it is.
Let's just Google it or whatever. All the Webbit back then, or Lycos it back in 98. Oh, it's coming out. Ask Jeeves it.
Hotbot.
Hotbot. That was one.
Which one was the dog?
That was Lycos.
That was Lycos. Okay.
Webcrawler was the
Webcrawler was like the original one that I used. Yeah.
Then you realize, holy shit, this is awful. And then Google came in and sort of like streamlined it and had better results. I remember All the Web being a good one because it reached the far reaches of the web. All the Web. You can find some shit you couldn't find. Back then, there was like 17 different search engines and they all had different algorithms. Obviously, Google won out. And now we just have Google and Bing. I don't know what else we even have anymore for searching. Anyway.
Yeah, Google, Bing.
So another announcement, a delay now, because Nintendo, game development is a little bit different, but Breath of the Wild just announced this morning, the sequel was pushed back to spring 2023. Originally, they wanted to come out this year, and they said, sorry, it's not going to happen.
Did they ever officially announce it? I'm not trying to make excuses. I think everyone assumed it was coming, but I don't know that it was ever like solidly announced it's coming this Christmas.
I mean, they originally announced this thing like a year and a half ago.
Sure.
So, I mean, more almost with footage. And so, like, it's fine. You had, what's this guy, producer, EJ Aonuma. Aonuma. He said, hey, it's coming. Sorry about that. Whoops. That's him. They previously announced they were aiming for a 2020 release. Man, Nintendo's not have luck with these announcements with Metroid Prime 4. And
well,
this.
Prime is Prime is a very different thing, but
Prime that's might be the biggest, I guess, blunder Nintendo ever did. I guess in terms of
the Virtual Boy.
But that came out like this has been sure. 5 years sure. of, since they originally announced Prime 4. I think it's 5 years. I think it's been, and like that's like nowhere to be seen.
Well, they completely restarted it. So.
That's what I mean. Like that's bad. In 5 years, that's nuts. So it's been 5 years. Yeah, it was pre-pandemic. That was a long time ago.
Sure.
That original announcement. Anyway, so that's going to be next year. We can wait for stuff. We can wait.
Yeah,
it's fine.
It's been a really good year for the Switch, anyways. So. Yep. And there's still stuff to come. I'm not particularly worried about it.
You want to talk PlayStation Plus, Ian?
PlayStation Plus is adding 3 tiers, and I have not seen exactly what the tiers offer, other than they offer retro games. So they're going to start offering their back catalog. This is kind of hot off the heels of what Nintendo did by including game libraries with various tiers. The big difference is Sony's first-party titles, they've got some good stuff, but it's not like they have the first-party cachet that, you know, Nintendo or Sega or any other company does. They have God of War, Gran Turismo. God of War.
Well, they did say that, at least at the start,
unlike
the Game Pass from Microsoft, they're not going to do the AAA games day one on Game Pass. On their version of it, on PlayStation Plus, they will not be there day one. They said maybe in the future, I think, but like day one, they need that cash for you to buy that.
Sure.
So these are the tiers they got. It's going to come in June, and it's going to roll up, because they used to confuse me, the things they had before, the different things are going to roll it all. What was the two different things they had
they
before?
They used to have PlayStation Plus, which was their online thing, and then they had PlayStation Now, which was their streaming, yes. And some of the games could be downloaded, their streaming service. Now they're combining those and just doing three tiers of a service that each tier offers something different.
You get, here's the three tiers. PlayStation Plus Essential. It's the same PlayStation Plus service that currently exists with no change to the current pricing. What's the current pricing? I don't know.
$60, $50.
A year, okay. It includes two monthly downloadable games, discount, save game, cloud storage, and access to online multiplayer. It's the basic thing you need to function the console.
Right.
Okay. Plus Extra includes a catalog of around 400 PS4 and PS5 games that can be downloaded at any time while you're a member. Okay, that's pretty cool.
Okay.
It includes first-party and third-party games, but no new exclusives will launch into the service. In the service, it's $15 a month, or $40 quarterly, or $100 yearly. Okay, that's a jump up from the original right there.
New exclusives will launch into the service. Okay.
And then here's the big one. Plus Premium. All the extra, you get all the essential, all the extra benefits, all the 400 games and first-party, third-party games download. And now you get 340 extra games in the catalog, and this is the retro ones. You get PS1, PS2, PSP games for streaming and download, and then PS3 games will also be available, but only to stream. Because it's probably too big to download all of them. I don't know.
No, it's because the PlayStation 3 is fucking weird.
Oh, really? Is that
why? It's just you couldn't download them on the PS4, PS Now either. And that's the killer for me. Like, there's a lot of PS3 stuff I'd love to play, but I'm not streaming them.
Streaming can be carried out on PS4, PS5, and PC. Okay, that's cool. You can stream on a PC that's pretty cool to get on the PC. Premium members will also receive time limited trials of some games. That'll be 18 a month, 50 a quarter, or 120 yearly. So basically, they're saying no one's going to get Plus Extra. You might as well spend 20 more bucks to get all the PS1, PS2, PSP, and PS3 games.
Right.
That's what it is.
That middle tier is usually to convince people to get the highest tier.
You're either going to go the low tier for 60 a year or whatever it is, and then or 120 to get all the retro games. You're going to get several hundred games between PS1 to PS5, basically. Like, this middle one is useless to me.
Sure.
But that's how they get you, Ian.
That's what I'm saying.
Why get a medium drink when the large is 20 cents more? That's how no one gets the medium drink. You go small or large.
You don't sell the middle tier. You use the middle tier as advertising for the higher tier.
Yeah, that's basically what happened there. So is this something you'd be interested in?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I would do if and when I eventually get a PS5. I'm not into it for the PS4.
I wonder how great the PC app and service will be. I'm not familiar with it. Obviously Microsoft, that's their bread and butter, like the PC. So theirs is probably perfect.
No, it's absolutely not perfect. I've talked about that on here. It's not perfect at all. It's actually surprisingly shoddy. Sony's doesn't have to do a whole lot to make it competitive. My problem is streaming. I'm not into game streaming.
You need a good connection, a solid connection.
Yeah, and I have one, but still, it's just like, I hate the,
You just hate the idea of itself?
I don't like the idea, yeah.
You want to have it like locally?
Locally, yeah.
Okay. All right. Until
it's bulletproof.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
GTA Plus is now there for $6 a month. Everything's a service. See, a podcast is technically could be a service.
Podcast as service.
Podcast service. So GTA, everything's a plus. GTA Plus is GTA's online new monthly subscription on PS5 and Xbox Series X. For $6 a month, you get extra GTA online rewards. You get bucks to spend in there.
500,000 delivered automatically.
This is all great.
So for the first month of benefits, you get $500,000. The Principe Diveste 8. I don't fucking care. I don't care about any of this. This is I see this being, I have not seen how this is being received in the community that plays this game. But I would imagine that it can't be very positive. At this point, this game is so old that I think introducing this is like that final cutoff for the hardcores. And the people who are really into this are going to buy this, and the people who don't are going to fade away.
Because they're already spending money probably in-game, so why not get this?
Right, why not get this? And the people who don't get it are probably the ones who are like, maybe I've had my run with this and I don't need to. Because I have a feeling these bonuses are really going to set the people who do pay apart from the pack.
What's this car meet thing? Opportunity to win a vehicle and you get exclusive merch, tattoos, and modding shops. This is virtual, right? This stuff is virtual. So there's a car meet up in the game with your car in these contests.
I don't know, man.
And so, but anyway, you get your with this subscription, that fee is waived. And I get this is like The Sims. This is like The Sims to me. This is you're living out all because it's okay. This is weird. Yacht owners can upgrade to the Aquarius Super Yacht at no additional cost. The Gusset Frog Tee and Broker Prolapse basketball top and shorts automatically added to your wardrobe. This is, like I said, this is a whole subculture I'm not familiar with. The GTA, like, this is weird to me. I'm reading about this stuff, and it's just, okay. 2x car meet rep on the Street Race series. Wow, they really built out this universe.
Yeah.
This is, okay.
So
all this stuff you can do. Broker Prolapse basketball top and shorts. Prolapse can mean a couple different things.
Yeah, it can.
You don't need a subscription at ultimatetino.com.
No, you don't.
But if you want to buy something, you get something in return for it directly, like the t-shirts, the limited t-shirt, and others. We have the Yoshi, there's less than 10 left, combat print signed by CG artist extraordinaire, my friend Yoshi, worked on Star Wars, The Mandalorian, Walking Dead, and other stuff there. You got the RBI baseball stickers, you got the enamel pins, and the books, of course, all at ultimatenintendo.com. My 100th stream happened last week. Ian showed up for a minute and a half at twitch.tv/country code. Country code.
I was in an Uber.
You didn't listen to it. You just said hi, everyone, and left.
Yeah, I chatted for the length of my Uber ride.
You didn't hear me do my little party thing.
No.
The horn.
No.
It was fun. 101's happening this Wednesday. It's a lot of fun. And I will be finally coming to the Midwest Gaming Classic in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. My first time in Wisconsin. That is April 30th and May 1st. This is years in the making. They were supposed to invite me out, and then I finally got invited out. In 2020, and then a little pandemic happened and everything got canceled.
Right.
I already had booked my flight and everything, so I'm looking forward to it. My pal Norm will be there with me. No news yet if he's going to be a roommate or not there. So there you go. I'm also on Cameo, cameo.com/.
No news yet whether we're sharing a bed, bunking.
Oh, no, there are nice rooms there. They're going to put us up in
I know. Room. I'm just thinking it's funny that you're like, no news yet on whether we're roommates.
No news yet, because people don't love our relationship as roommates.
People love our relationship.
Yeah, it's a sitcom. You want to talk about Bungie, Ian?
Yeah, so this was interesting.
Was it, Ian?
This was brought to our attention.
No, you brought it to my attention this morning.
Well, it was brought to my attention this morning, and I brought it to your attention.
Yeah.
So Bungie is getting they've got some nasty words for YouTube regarding their lousy DMCA security loophole, customer service, the fact that takedowns essentially on YouTube are way too easy. So what happened is, here's the gist as far as I can tell. Destiny 2 is free to play. Bungie really wants to encourage a community there, because obviously with a free-to-play game, the best way to get money from your customers is to encourage a community. Then they buy into the products as they're playing.
Yeah, it's free advertising.
It's free advertising.
Yeah.
So Bungie, I guess, has been trying to promote some user-created content. And I guess they got into some hot water late last year or earlier this year for some takedown stuff, community takedown stuff. And they were like, okay, we're going to change our ways. This is how it's going to work. Well, someone went and created, or multiple people went and created some accounts that looked like Bungie accounts, and then issued a bunch of DMCA takedown notices to player created content. Some of it, I believe, even on Bungie's own channel, and got the stuff wrongfully taken down. This, of course, caused a huge backlash against Bungie, who had been in hot water for this prior and had come out and said, hey, we're going to make this right. We really do want this user-created content. So Bungie is pissed, and Bungie is now filing a lawsuit against 10 unnamed individuals for basic, I think it's like basically defamation, damage to the company image.
They committed fraud.
Exactly. Yeah. So these people are definitely going to have the law, and they have been very angry with YouTube over the fact that it's way too easy to be any little shit, essentially, can go and issue a DMCA takedown. And a lot of the time, YouTube is going to issue it because it's a more or less automated process.
Oh, yeah.
Bungie said that it took them, and they're Bungie, they have money. It took them all weekend to get the thing sorted out. They had to go through multiple layers, they said. They, of course, got the copyright strikes and the takedown strikes against these creators reversed. They got the videos back up. But it was a weekend-long process for them. And, I mean, like I said, this is Bungie. If it took them all weekend, imagine the... You have no shot in hell if you're just a regular person.
They used it. Let's see. It looks like one more individuals used a Gmail address modeled after those used by one of Bungie's IP protection partners to send out a wave of DMCA takedown notices against videos that weren't actually infringing any of its policies. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
The same address was then used to send messages to content creators claiming that authentic takedown notices issued previously were in fact fraudulent. Defendants also allegedly sent abusive messages to the Bungie's legitimate IP protection partner. Oh boy, they're in trouble. They're in trouble. This you can't do this shit and don't think it's coming like Bungie's not going to sit idly by.
So it'll be interesting to see if YouTube does anything at all. I mean, I don't know that they will, but I mean, now you've got this big company, you know, calling you out for these problems, and I mean that's unfortunately a lot of times what we need to. See changes in this sort of stuff.
The lawsuit includes a step-by-step breakdown of Bungie's efforts to stop and reverse the false takedowns, a weekend-long litany of escalation and runaround that will likely sound familiar to anyone who's ever had to deal with customer service at a large distant company. The other thing about YouTube, it sounds like it's run as like a tech company. Like, oh, we do tech, and then like customer support and what actually is using the platform is like secondary. It's like we don't concern ourselves with that. It's all the tech and everything. That's at least what I've heard about, like the inside skinny on how it actually operates. Like it's like they're like just blissfully unaware of how the platform's actually used.
Really?
Like at least like in general, like that's just how right. It is. It's like there's a disconnect.
Sure.
Between that, you have like the high end tech part, and then it's almost an afterthought. The rest. Oh, I've been on. This has happened to me before.
Yeah,
we'll talk about it eventually. It has to do with a later topic, a certain console. Oh, this happened to me for several videos.
Speaking of disconnects, a popular Steam game on March 22nd. So, Storybook Brawl is, and I've seen it, I've never played it, is a popular free-to-play card game on Steam. I've seen it advertised to me. I like card games. I've even considered playing it before. I never have. But it has a large and active player base. It's got very positive... It had very positive reviews.
It had
very positive reviews. On March 22nd, Good Luck Games was acquired by FTX US, which is a cryptocurrency exchange. Oh, and they bought the game and just outright said... they see games as an exciting use case for crypto, and Storybook Brawl is going to go in that direction. Their ideas for Storybook Brawl are, of course, extremely vague, because all details for NFT projects are. They talk about how they'll make sure this is from an article by Zach Zweizen. They'll make sure that the integration is ethical and it will make the game better for players while making sure the fun comes first. And then he goes on to say the same thing I did. Vague promises and non-specific plans are always part of the NFT blockchain announcements. They are. There's never anything concrete. There's never a concrete roadmap. So
I'm looking at the reviews, overwhelmingly negative the recent reviews on Steam.
So it got review bombed. It's now near universally negative. They're going to lose everyone. Good luck, games. They made their money, but that game is officially, I mean, it's dead. There's already people, you know, talking about how dead the game is, and it's time to move on and find something else. I mean, it's just stop. And this is the thing that gets me. March 22nd, we haven't really talked about NFTs recently because, honestly, the NFT craze seems to be...
It's cratering.
Yeah. At GDC, I heard two sides of the opinion, or two sides of the coin.
Oh.
Friend of the podcast, Daniel Greenberg, said that, you know, there was a lot of booths there, but no one was interacting with the NFT booths. No one cared. Then there was someone else. I said that despite the fact that no one cares, there is still a lot of talk at GDC from a certain sector about pushing this. So they're probably going to try to do it for a little bit longer.
They're in the minority.
But this is... This is an example of how unpopular this is, that you can take an extremely popular free-to-play game, say you're going to add NFTs to it, and completely kill it. It's dead.
Even if we'll just say 10%, 15% of games implement some form of NFT bullshit, the only buy-in is going to be people that love the idea of NFTs. So the games will never be, unless it's like, every person that likes NFT will flock to those certain games. Everyone else, like, these people are going to be like, fuck this, I'm done. You lost me.
Right.
This is not going to, you're not going to turn the tide. You're not.
And as we've reported on here before, and other articles have reported, you only have an audience of about 400,000 active NFT traders, people who are interested in NFTs.
At the peak, we don't know what it is
now. Peak, right? Yeah. So you're limiting your player base,
or you have to try to indoctrinate new players. But
which at this point, it's not going to work. I have in my life, I don't think I've ever seen such a universal revulsion to something like that. That they tried to sell to us.
Not recommended. The developer was recently. This is comments on Steam. The developer was recently bought out by crypto company FTX that plans to use the game as a test bed for NFT monetization strategies. No thanks. Not recommended. Good luck. Games was acquired by FTX, a cryptocurrency company. This is a larger conversation about Good Luck Games selling it, knowing that their game was going to be destroyed.
Yes, that's also something else.
Obviously, they got money. But, like, it's really a conundrum. I'm going to ruin the game we put all our blood, sweat, and tears into that people enjoy. That's a sellout. You're selling out.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, because it's not like, I can't imagine them being like, oh, the game's going to be better after the sale. No, you got paid out. You're done. That's selling out.
Yes.
In the truest sense of the word.
Oh, yeah.
You've given up on your property. Like, we're not going to do any more versions. We're not going to, you know what I mean? Like, we're done.
We're out.
We know our audience is going to fucking hate this. We're going to lose our player
base. But we don't care.
The game is done.
I mean, honestly, not surprised to see that attitude from a free-to-play game company.
I get it, but like,
I mean, I just...
It's despicable. At the time of the game was like, that was always the intent of the game. Then I'm like, okay, I get it. It's shitty, but that was the intent. This is like, you're throwing your fans under the bus.
Right.
On it there. You know, it's also free-to-play, Ian.
Tell me, Patrick.
Hater
oh.
By Gator Ooze, who's now done three different Intellivision Amico styled games. Remember, they did originally did Hater Smash, which was their Astro Smash clone, created in a day. Then they did, recommended by a certain podcast, Han Ipich's 10 Stages of crowdfunding or investment, whatever it was. And now there's Hater. I'm looking at the video on YouTube that Ninja Kitty posted. Hater is Shark that was made in one day that honestly looks better than the Intellivision Amico. And I'm not saying that.
It doesn't look like a bunch of acid slapped together.
It's not like you say kit bashed.
Yeah.
This is assets that look like they belong together. It's a very simple graphic style or simpler graphic style, not garish, and it all fits together. And it's Shark, the most simple game. You run around and you basically eat things and you're a bigger fish and you avoid sharks. That's Shark.
Yep.
So I don't know. Can we get a whole suite of these games and put them on Steam? That would be very interesting. And call it, I don't know, like the Hater Pack.
The Hater Pack, yeah.
You know what I mean? That could be interesting. Maybe we have like a CU podcast game in here. But anyway, so it's just interesting to see that it really shows you how, like, the fact that people can put these games together quickly is great. Obviously, it's a lot easier nowadays with Unity to do stuff like that. But it more shows you just how shallow the games are that you were expected to spend $250 to $300 for a console to get, when someone could release a game for free in a day that is the same exact gameplay and honestly looks better.
Yep.
So this segment of the CU podcast is sponsored by Whatnot, the go-to app for live stream buying and selling of collectibles. You can find your favorite retro games and connect with friends and your favorite game stores on the app. No bots to compete with. No sniping. You can see each auction and the item. The seller explains the item they have, and then you bid. It's simple and fun, and it's free to join. Just go to whatnot.com/invite/country code to get $10 off your purchase. Use the link or find it in the App Store and Google Play. Make a profile, add a credit card, and you can be bidding on a live auction in under a minute.
On Friday, April 1st at 5:30 p.m. PST, Whatnot is running a fun retail rally event with Cody from Mad World of Gaming. They do it every month, and this month the theme is Super Nintendo. You will have a chance to purchase Super Nintendo games at their original retail price. This includes some heavies like Sonic Blast Man 2, complete in box, Pocky and Rocky 2, loose, Earthbound, complete in box, and more, all for $50.
What? Go sign up and get yourself some retro games. Head to whatnot.com/invite/contra code to get $10 off your purchase for any new user on the app. Whatnot, buy, sell, and go live. But speaking of the Intellivision Amico, Ian, coincidentally or not, I tweeted, after we finished recording the podcast, within a few hours, a video was put up, comments restricted, on the official Intellivision Entertainment YouTube channel, unboxing the Intellivision Amico. Unboxing.
This is not the first time that they've put something out. They've released something suspiciously close to the time of the podcast ending.
And before you say you guys are too full of yourselves, I will just remind you of two different things, three different things.
They've made it perfectly clear that we live in their heads. I don't think that's full of ourselves to say that.
Tommy has publicly admitted he attempted to troll us, Ian and me, with the upside down controller in the Finnegan Fox video, publicly admitted that.
That was one of the first instances of like, I can remember, of people who were pro Amico
being like, this is nuts.
This is ridiculous.
That was the end for
that. Why the fuck are you trying to... you're lying your ass off. But sure. Two, why are you framing it like you're trying to troll a podcast? You're a businessman.
That's when we knew like there wasn't a war to be won. It was done at that point. But not just that. There's a 50-minute video we've never really publicly commented on, that an quote-unquote unlisted video that he posted publicly, that Tommy spends 50 minutes trying to justify his weird antics on forums and tweeting at us aggressively. And it's a bizarre video directed at us, 50 minutes, not 15. And so that's an example of them knowing how we operate and trying to work around it. And we will comment on that video at some point and go through it. I think that'll be a fun, when this is all over, that'll be a fun thing to do.
Yeah.
So that aside, this video comes out, comments are turned off. There's not even a description in this. It's just an upload. So this is before we get into it, I will say this. We don't know when they filmed this video, if it was a month ago, 2 months ago. One of the individuals in the video I recognize as an employee that showed up in one of the hangout videos that happened last year where Tommy's walking around while they're eating food or whatever. So there are employees involved with part of the gameplay at the end. But it's an 8.5-minute video, and I think the goal of this video was to say, hey, we are a professional company and we have a product and we have to make sure people in Europe and in Germany still think that this is happening. We have to make sure that our partners know that we are a functioning company, even though behind the scenes we are on our last legs.
So it's clearly not a video for customers. Like just about everything they've ever done, it's very clearly an investor video. It's a video for investors. It's to say they need someone to offer them money for their product, to buy them out, or they go under.
Give them more money.
This is the last-ditch effort they have, so they figured, let's grab everything we have and put it together as nicely as possible and show people what we have. And I'll say it, not having Tommy on the video does go a long way to improving the initial feel of the video. I'm not positive on this video, but I do think it's
absolutely
the most,
not positive.
No, but I do think it's the most professional video they've put out, which is not saying a whole lot. The lack of Tommy, and this, don't take this the wrong way, because I'm not big on John Alvarado either.
No.
Guy's crazy. I mean, fucking crazy, but, he puts on a better public face. However, the video falls apart pretty quickly.
There's a quote.
It's a facade. It's a Potemkin village. It falls apart as soon as you start to look at it.
It's deception.
It's deception. It's not a retail unit. It's
a handmade prototype.
It's a handmade prototype. It's what you've seen floating around. It's probably something that was at one of the meetups. It's what you've seen in the videos prior. These exist. We've never said that these prototypes don't exist. What we want to know is what's in there. With no manufacturing, it's very likely, and we've said this all the time, it's just an Android box in a shell. There's nothing special or proprietary about the Amico right now. It's literally a box that you could probably buy online, load up these API or these APKs, and run them.
Well, they definitely didn't have a board in 2019 when they showed out E3. My sources say it was an orange pie, basically in the shell. Regardless, whether or not it's a real board or not at this point, these are prototypes. These are not retail ready.
Oh, of course not.
Units. And that box was probably made a year ago. Or whenever Tommy in the past has said, oh, we got this awesome box. You've never seen a box like this before. All this bullshit. It was a revolutionary box. I'm serious. These are things he said.
Like, I know. And one of the big things that I just need to mention is Tommy's bloviating and overselling of everything is easily one of the least likable things. This box is going to do things. He literally said the box is going to, it's never been done before.
Well, it's the thing about the physical product. This hasn't been done before. And you even had a bunch of their cultists like on early look go along with it. Oh yeah, this is revolutionary.
I think the only time he ever referred to me by name in an Atari Age post where he said, yes, Ian, you do need the controller to play these games.
People were saying this was revolutionary. This shit was revolutionary. Revolutionary, horrible, how you can put out a physical product for games that will never be released. That's revolutionary, Ian.
They try real hard in the video to make it look like, though, they try to make it look professional. They open the box, which has been around for a while. You can see dings on the
There's
box.
There's dents on it. It looks, it's a one-off.
It's been opened before.
That wasn't made at some plant somewhere. That's a one-off they had made.
They don't have a stack of these.
Yeah, I want to see like them flattened and stacked up to the ceiling.
No, they have a sample.
Yeah.
They even had like a, you know, they wanted to show off. So they take it out, they unbox it, and it's like, oh, here's a quick start guide. A quick start guide that misspells their own fucking company's name.
Yes, it was Intellivision with an E for at the last instead of an I for vision. It was awful. And then that web URL.
I mean, the spelling errors the spelling errors like throughout this whole thing are just mind boggling. Hire someone to actually do something. Hire a copy editor.
Did you see the grammar errors on the side of the box?
Yes.
Like, we're talking, like, dashes where they shouldn't be and dashes where they should be, where, like, you could just get a $15 Grammarly account and put it in, and it would have found these errors. This is how rudimentary these errors have always been on their videos and in their... It's bad.
It's Bush League bullshit is what it is. Bush League bullshit. So, and then you look at the quick start guide, which is, you know, shaped to fit in the box. So it has a custom shape. Well, that would have cost a lot of money to get custom printed. Oh, they didn't. All it takes is like 2 seconds looking at it. It's like raggedly cut with scissors.
Yeah. And plus the instructions URL is no, it's a 404 on Intellivision site. There's nothing there. There's nothing there. If you go to the actual Intellivision.com/instructions, there's nothing there.
It's hilarious.
It just says there's nothing here.
Hilarious that they couldn't even throw get the facade. They couldn't extend it out further.
Yeah, the side of the box has grammar errors. I didn't put them down, but like they are bad. They don't know that the difference between nouns and adjectives using dashes. And I'm not saying everyone should be perfect, but this is supposed to be a professional product,
right?
By a professional company.
I remember he said two brand new Amico controllers. No,
they were scuffed. We saw evidence of them being scuffed and marks on the screen. Let me just say this. This is not even a sample unit in terms of like they would never pack the controllers like that just laying on the console. They would be packed individually.
I thought they were packed individually. I'm pretty sure they were in separate.
They were laying on top, you know, on the console. When he opens it, they're laying on top.
I thought he pulled them out of two separate compartments.
Ian, I love you, Ian.
Okay, that's fine. I'm just saying I thought he did.
You're giving him too much credit. Go to 140 in the video. They're just laying there. That would never happen when you're shipping electronics that delicate.
Oh no.
Especially since there's so much things in that controller that could go wrong. Those things would be protected. They'd have their own like layer of protection themselves for there. I love that the box says there's six best-selling games on this when these games haven't sold anywhere.
Right.
Astro Smash sold 40 years ago, a different version. Cornhole hasn't sold anywhere. I guess if you mean the people that bought the physical units and set them up, you can't cheat like that. Skiing, people have gone skiing, you know, in the mountains, but that's not a best-selling game because it hasn't been released yet, this version. You can't just say things are best-selling when they're not.
No.
That's got to be an FTC violation.
Well, I mean, honestly, it probably falls under puffery. You can probably...
Best-selling?
You'd probably be like, well, cornhole does sell a lot, like of actual stuff.
You can go out to fucking Dick's Sporting Goods and buy a set.
Either way, it's extremely scummy and deceptive.
Yes.
Also, I wish he would stop. It's one of his favorite words. Everyone has favorite words. You know someone long enough, you know they use them a lot. Premium. Premium is one of his favorite words, and I fucking hate it. There's nothing premium about these games.
No, there's absolutely nothing premium. Let me just say this. Speaking of FTC violation, nowhere in the video, in the description, there's no little text saying that this is not a retail unit. This is a prototype unit. That could be an FTC violation. To present it as this is a final product when this is not a final product.
And to go further with that, when they set it up and turn it on, it's
pre-set up.
Yeah, and there's more games than the six pack in games. There's games that would not be included on there. Nowhere, I don't think it's mentioned that this is like...
No.
Not included. They do a really scummy little fake downloading of the game, but I think John Alvarado
even says store's not set up.
Store's not set up. There is no store.
That exists in the back. The store doesn't exist in the back end. Doesn't exist.
And then they spent like 2 minutes of an 8 minute long video going over language options.
Yeah. Let me go back to the fact that they don't say it's not a retail unit. This has 32,000 views on it, this video. This has 32,000 views. Comments are off. So no one can inform people, hey, listen, that's a prototype unit. He doesn't say it's a prototype unit. So what does that do? That makes people, it tricks people. This is where it goes back to deception. It tricks people into thinking this is ready to go, potentially, because most people aren't following this as well as we have or people that are listening. My friend, a smart person, I love this person, has been following this based upon our coverage. And I have his permission to I asked him to this was his text when he saw that. I actually kind of bought the unboxing at first, but now I'm not sure. I mean, if it's a mock-up, I'm not sure whether I mind it being called an unboxing. Just a matter of like, are these being made en masse or what? That's my point. This is tricking people to either potentially realize this is still coming out anytime soon.
Right.
It's not coming out this year. We know that. Even if they got a massive amount of funding. But it's tricking people that have pre-orders to not cancel them. And by the way, I've screenshots of people that 6 weeks ago still haven't gotten the refunds yet on this. And it's also potentially tricking people to now buy this shit. There might be a couple people out there, Ian, I'm not saying it's right or wrong. Hey, this looks like it's coming out. I'm going to put my pre-order in now. This is deception.
Yeah.
It's fraudulent not to say that this clearly, and I mean clearly, that this is a prototype unit in a one-off mock-up box. It's awful. The AC adapter for Europe is a U.S. one, North American AC adapter, and it's obviously not fresh. The wrap was not proper on it. They just shoved it back in the box.
Because once again, they probably got like, it was probably like, print your company name on these cords, get a free trial today. And they sent them one like one free power cord.
But this was what other shit they had on it. They had the box in the corner. They had some controllers laying around. They had a lenticular card printed on this. Let's just throw this video out there. It's bad. It's desperation. John says early on, the box is an important part of bringing Amico to the public. The box is probably the least important part of bringing the Amico to the public.
Also, 44 seconds, fully functional Amico for European partners with no store, no RFID tap. NFT capabilities. The lights weren't on at any point. I don't remember seeing. So it's not fully functional.
No. And Hans, he's why did they ship it to Hans, by the way? Hans tweeted out or posted that, oh, I have it. This is a dream come true.
Except for the fact that he's been carting the same fucking units around Europe running the demos.
It's smoke and mirrors.
Yes.
There's grammar errors, like I said, on the box. John thanked the localization team. He thanked the localization team at the beginning for helping on the box.
That was quickly pointed out that the translation, at least the French translation, is absolute dog shit. Only one of the words was actually translated properly. All of the other words were translated in the wrong context.
Yes, the localization team, John, was translate.google.com that was used.
Right.
Not just on the box, probably, but also in the in-game menu, which we'll get into for switching out the languages. It was an embarrassment. People were saying right away, the French is all wrong.
The French is, like, I guess the worst. The one guy, I think, like, the word they chose for redeem, instead of, like, redeem, like, your game, it means, like, to redeem yourself, like, in the eyes of God or something like that, or in the eyes of someone. It's crazy.
We got to talk about the startup, the deceptive startup of the system. That, to me, was the biggest red flag of all that people might not have noticed. Remember, based upon our product, we're like, we want to see the Amico boot up. And then, like, a month and a half later, Tommy and John, this was, what was that, late 2020, show the Amico booting up. And it took more than a minute to go from power on to when you're actually using the controller.
And Tommy pulled the Sean Spicer and was like, it was 30 seconds.
Yeah, it was like, no, it's over a minute. I went back and rewatched that. So in this video, you see John hit the power button. You don't see it come on the TV. It cuts away from the one shot where showing John had to push a button. You don't know how much time passed. You have no idea how much time passed between the power button and getting to the menu. But you do then see the table again, and the quick start instruction paper's gone, and the console's been moved. So,
yeah, there's a lot of cuts. I think the system moves like three times during the video.
All I know is this. I think it's, again, deceptive not to show the actual boot up time. If it was, Ian, if it was instant, I don't think they would have cut away.
No,
if it was
not
10 seconds, they wouldn't have cut away.
No, someone had gathered some responses from John Alvarado in an Amico chat afterwards, and he said that it was edited because the boot up time was long.
Still long. 2 years later. Still long. The settings, they changed the settings. They're all German. The text was still English on the side. It's a sloppy error. It was there. And if you notice that, you click Deutsch, and it was still English on the side. Tommy, he said Tommy's favorite Italiano. Can we fucking stop with this shit? Can we stop with the Italian jokes and shit? I'm an Italian American. Can we just stop with it? Just stop. No password was entered for the Wi-Fi. The console was pre-set up.
Yeah.
You put in a store setup with a zip code. European countries don't have a zip. They don't use a zip code in Europe. Some countries in Europe don't have even a postal code at all for their location. Some do. It's a different format either way than a zip code. Just another sloppy error that wasn't set up there. And the 610E, you touched on this. He said the store is not active yet. The store is not active because it doesn't fucking exist in a functional form.
Yeah. That was said in the SEC filing, the document. They need at least, what was it, 1.5 million for the back end or something like that.
It was like, we need a third of the 5 million for firmware stuff and back end stuff and cloud. And then they butchered my cornhole. Not, that didn't sound so good.
Oh my God, Pat.
They butchered my cornhole. So cornhole, remember summer of 2021. They showed in one of their parties, just off the side, Tom said, hey, let's look at cornhole. And then John was there. And then, oh, we had to throw out how the motion worked because it didn't work on the cornhole. The motion didn't work. Now you got to hit a target and do an arc and then throw it. It's not one-to-one motion anymore. So in this video, Ian, even compared to cornhole when we first saw it, the graphics were nerfed. They were a lot simpler.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the textures on the trees were most noticeable. And also, when they throw the bag, it doesn't look like it really throws the bag until you're almost done with the swing. So it's not one-to-one. It's not like a Wii bowling thing where you let go and it goes. There's a obvious gap where it doesn't seem like they've figured it out, where like it's taking the data and then transferring it and then doing it.
It's a power meter, basically. Yeah, and then spitting out the result.
And if you've ever played cornhole, one of the, you know, things that's a big part of the game is how the beanbags will slide or move around after they've been
thrown or tumble.
These just stick and are done. Like they're fucking 125 pounds.
I think it was very telling that in their demo, they did not show one bag going into the cornhole.
Yes, they did not. I remember that too. I was like, come on, show me.
Show me like that this works, that you can aim this. And they couldn't show that in their video.
Nope.
It's a disaster. It's finished. It's ready to go. And then this actually annoyed me more than I thought. The Moon Patrol co-op mode that they showed. They had the balls to say,
where it's like it just fucking parcels out the controller, right?
Each
person controls one button.
Their co-op mode with their expensive tech is literally what Ian and me used to do in the marathon, saying, "Oh, you're gonna run in Mega Man, and I'll do the jumping and shooting."
Yeah,
we're just gonna divide out the control functions, but between four people. I guess so. One person does the jump, one person does the shoot, one person does the speed.
Premium, revolutionary, multiplayer, couch co-op gaming for the family. Right fucking there.
Oh my God. Is there anyone, even a Moon Patrol fan, that would use that mode for more than 30 seconds on a lark?
No, because it's a fucking cheap cop-out. It's not actually fun.
So they tacked on the gameplay stuff to make it seem like this is a marketing video as well, for maybe for Koch Industries, who's doing the distribution in Europe, or for the German partners, or maybe the Bavarian Grant people are like, what the fuck's going on with this, that all this money's been put into this? Maybe they're trying to get more Bavarian Grant money, probably.
I want to know what happened to Bomb Squad. I mean, I know what happened to Bomb Squad. They didn't pay them any money, so they stopped working on the game.
Just like with the other Ocean games.
I'm assuming that's how it is for all of these. But all the good stuff, but Bomb, it's really telling too that there's nothing going on there, because Bomb Squad was touted as by Tommy and others as the game that was like going to be the killer app for the Amico, I think, more than the other stuff, because they said it was going to use every single function the Amico controller,
LEDs,
and the system had,
touch screen, sounds,
gyrometer. Yeah, it was going to use it all. Microphone, it was going to use everything. And nothing. We haven't seen any of it. It hasn't been demoed. That would be the game to demo if you really want to show off the system.
Yeah, that would be one that would be a packing game, I would think. Because I would think it's the one that would have to use the controller. The one that would you have to use the controller on this with different colors and things. Let alone the fact that some people are colorblind, and that would affect how they could play, but whatever. Like that would be the one game. But then you realize, they probably never went past proof of concept when they showed in that one video.
Yeah, and I mean, from everything we've heard about the controller, there's no way they could have done anything particularly advanced on the touchscreen. There's not enough space.
No, you have 1 megabyte.
Megabyte.
You can do like a picture. You can do like a fish. A fish gif on there, basically. So in the midst of all this, and obviously people knowing this is a disaster, On our favorite website, Atari Age, they are allowing a thread called "Is the Amico Dead?" to be there the past couple of weeks, which is good, because it should be there. You should allow this, since you allowed the Amico to get basically marketed there, and it was used as a home base for attacking critics like Ian and myself. So it is, turnabout is fair play, at least in terms of this. You should allow people to realize what's going on with this disaster.
Yeah, I think even Atari Age right now realizes that coming out as pro Amico would be seen as very bad.
But even staying silent is like taking a side. You
sure
have to point out how bad this is at this point. So there should be a thread I'm putting out there with all the people that haven't gotten their refunds. Don't be afraid of Tommy or Intellivision. If you want your refund and you didn't get it, say it loud and clear. If I got to read a list off of the people that still haven't gotten their refunds, if you want me to, I'll do it. We'll do it every fucking week. Put their fucking feet to the fire. I don't care publicly. People have gotten a couple. I'm seeing reports of people literally asking back in February for a refund and haven't gotten one yet. Put their feet to the fire. All their patents got rejected too. We saw that. That's not as big of a deal, but it just shows that they have nothing at this point still.
Right.
They have nothing. And they have, I think, up to 6 months in order to go back and refile. But that costs money. Not just refiling. Patent lawyers are not cheap. That whole process is – but like – I think they waited to submit, Ian, because they could always say, oh, we're patent pending. It's patent pending.
Right.
At some point, there'll be no more penny patents.
Right. Exactly. Once there's no pending patents, they have nothing to say.
You can't have a sale saying, oh, we're selling our patent pending stuff. No, at some point, there won't be any patents you can potentially even sell. So the value of the company drops. Like, this was all planned. They could have submitted these patents 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. But then by now, you realize they'd have no patents. Yeah. So it's all a game. It's all a fucking game. It's a game. They're just trying to get more of your money on it.
It's all about the game. How you play it?
Oh, he retired, Ian, Triple H.
Yeah.
You know, that's a whole other conversation.
C-plus.
C-plus wrestler?
C-plus
wrestler. Is that wrestler. What Bret Hart? Bret Hart used to say, show me a 5-star Triple H match or something.
Like, yeah.
Or a 4-star Triple H. And it's like, you can't find him.
You can't.
Hold a conversation there. That's all really much I have to say. I think it's really scummy and deceptive not to clearly state in the video and have in description and have text at least twice saying, no, this is not a retail unit. This is a prototype.
Yeah.
Subject to change. Like something to let the person know, oh, I'm not potentially being tricked.
Yeah.
That's a whole part of the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, to make sure stuff like that doesn't happen. Otherwise, it becomes false advertising on it. So, all right. Anything else? There's going to be another video released literally 2 hours from now after we're done recording. We'll see. Time is money. Don't waste either with repeated trips to the post office. With Stamps.com, you can skip the trip and focus on how to take your small business to the next level. Stamps.com lets you print official postage right from your computer and saves you money in the process. So you can spend less time at the post office and more time making your customers happy. I've used Stamps.com for years to ship out CU podcast pins, t-shirts, video games, books, lots of things. They've saved me tons of time. It's very, very simple and easy to use. Stamps.com saves you time, money, and stress. For more than 20 years, Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses. Stamps.com gives you access to all the post office and UPS shipping services you need right from your computer. And get discounts you can't find anywhere else, like up to 40% off USPS rates and 76% off UPS. Whether you're in office sending invoices, a side hustle Etsy shop, you're selling on eBay, or a full-blown warehouse shipping out orders, Stamps.com will make your life easier. All you need is a computer and a standard printer. No special supplies or equipment required. You're up and running in minutes, printing official postage for any letter, any package, anywhere you want to send. Stop overpaying for shipping with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code CUPODCAST for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, free postage, and a digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. See why I like using Stamps.com. Just go to Stamps.com. Click the microphone at the top of the page and enter code CUPODCAST. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Ian, we got a Patreon.
Patreon.com/CUPODCAST. Go pay, receive.
Go pay, receive.
Go pay, receive.
Like a vending machine?
Yeah. Go pay, receive. Get the full video podcast. You get hangout sessions once a month. You can get bonus bits of the podcast. You can participate in these poll topics. I do a writing once a week.
We had a very, not intense, but very nice dialogue this week about social media and how it changes our behavior and things like that.
Yes.
This week. Our Patreon poll topics this week, Ian. In second place, what is a Norm Winkle YouTuber? 34%. It's an article about our pal Norm we want to discuss. Hint, hint. Would you have covered, in first place, 66%. It's like bait. Would you have covered Coleco Chameleon differently knowing what you know now? This comes from a suggestion from Aaron Bossig on Twitter. Would you... Seeing it go through the worst iteration now with the Intellivision Miko, would you have covered it differently several years back?
Yeah, I think we wouldn't have even couched it as an idea. I mean, we would have assumed right off the bat that it wasn't going to be doable. When it came out, when they announced the retro VGS, I think that, in the Coleco Chameleon, I think we knew that it was a bad idea and it was doomed. And we knew that it was going to be difficult, but I don't think we realized how impossible it is. Now that we've seen a company such as Intellivision
Well, we didn't see the point at the time.
We didn't see the point. Yeah. Right, right. We didn't see the point, and that was the problem. I think now we would cover it from a slightly different perspective, and that is it's just not financially possible. Like, I just don't see it being financially possible to create a new small system like this. That
for original games.
For original games.
Like the Evercade did the smart thing and said, we're going to do packs of games. We don't have to worry about that. It's a smaller form factor. You know what you get. We're not going to go pie in the sky, and we're going to give people what they want. They try to take the remember then play again bullshit, where we're going to do new games and cartridges.
Yep.
That you can't probably get anywhere else. No bugs. We're locked into 1992, basically, and that's what you get. And at the time, we're like, gaming has evolved from there. Like, you want there to be potentially updates to games. Why would you not do that? So taking the old model for new games makes zero sense.
Yeah.
At all.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
At all.
No. I mean, it's just not part of the market. And as time has gone on, because they also had like a no DLC thing, mm-hmm. I probably would have hammered on how stupid that was as well. Because love it or hate it, and I think most people hate it, it's the economic model. For a game developer to be able to make money off of a game these days, they can't just count on the initial sales. Games take up a lot of time to create. They need that revenue in between, you know, big releases. So the DLC has to be there for small developers to be able to, you know, make a living on this sort of stuff.
Or that becomes just their only game that they support for several years, potentially. You know what I mean? That could happen as well.
Right.
If the game's popular enough, maybe you want to stay in that world. Maybe that's all you want to do. Like, it limits your options so much to say, no DLC, this is what you get, and that's it. That's just, it's silly. It's a lot sillier several years later, but so looking back, yeah, I think we would have hammered that point.
But in all honesty, yeah. I mean, I don't think the coverage would have changed that much, because it's not like we were ever particularly positive on the Coleco Chameleon. I don't think we ever were. And, you know, after covering the Amico, all I can say is that our coverage would have probably, if the Amico had come first and the Chameleon had been second, all I can say is that we probably would have been even harder on the Chameleon.
Yes, because we would have saw, obviously, the track record of failure and all people's money was taken. Remember, the Indiegogo was canceled for the Chameleon, or Retro VGS, whatever it was at the time, Chameleon. They canceled the Indiegogo because people were like, this is bullshit. We need more evidence. I did that.
Well, and similarly to the Start Engine round of crowdfunding by television, it was embarrassing for them too, because they just weren't going to get anywhere near what they were asking.
Yeah. Would we have been, I think I would have been, we got blowback a little bit. Like, you were out, and then, you know, Gamester did his video about me when I never said his name, you know, at all. I made it an intentional point not to say his name, being involved with the packing game. But looking back at it now, I think even with that, I think we use kid gloves in terms of some of the people that came after us, some of the critics. And looking back at it now, I think I would have been a lot more fierce going back at some of those people. Because there were a couple of bigger YouTubers, remember, that even said stuff about our coverage.
Sure.
And their little fucking passive-aggressive wouldn't say our names thing, like that one fucking little troll that we both know. Like, looking back at that now, I would have not... I would have went more full-throated at them, knowing that you are helping encourage what it looks like to be something not just bad, but could be in scam territory.
Yeah, I'm kind of split on that. I mean, we ignore a lot of... we haven't really mentioned any of the pro Amico YouTubers by names, but they're small. They're small. I probably... I tend to like to ignore that, because they want a reaction. They want drama. They want to create drama for so that you make a video, so that they can make a reaction video, and they can keep making videos and getting clicks off of them. So I like to ignore it. But bigger YouTubers, yes, it probably would have been a little bit.
There were some bigger YouTubers. I
probably would have defended ourselves a bit more.
Yeah, because not just as I'm older, I'm way past the go along to get along phase of my life. Especially when that YouTuber in question, I end up seeing at a convention then, and not just ever apologizes, then asks me for like the bro deal on my book at a convention. Like, not just never apologize, then fucking, I know it's embarrassing. Fucking embarrassing. Try to be a tough guy online, and then in person, can I get a deal on your book?
Who was that?
I'll say it after the show. I don't want to cause drama. I think I told you once. So, like, this is what I'm talking about. And that's obviously it's an ego thing with me, but it's like, you stand behind your fucking words, or else don't pretend to be a fucking tough guy on the internet. Anyway, so other than that, I think our covers was
like Zadok Payet.
Oh yes, you can bring up every fucking week.
Fuck Zadok Payet.
we got to put it on the soundboard almost at this point.
Yeah.
So I think our coverage was pretty judicious. We went, I don't think we were overly acerbic with it until we were called out as drunken podcasters by Mike Kennedy on Atari Age. I think we actually laughed at it, at how ridiculous it was. I don't think we got upset about it. We're like, this is like,
ridiculous. Why would I get upset about
it? I'm just trying to remember it clearly though. Like, I think we were just like,
I wasn't angry. No,
it was ridiculous. And you knew that at that point, the company's in trouble when a person, of that sort of character, when they show themselves, you're like, this is not a company that can be run properly. This is the person heading it. The same thing going back to the 50 minute video that Tommy did about me and Ian. At that point, I'm like, this company's done. This type of person with this temperament cannot run this company properly.
Unhinged.
An unhinged person that cannot accept even a modicum of criticism cannot run a functioning company like that, especially when they're all surrounded by yes men. You cannot run a company if no one's steering the fucking ship properly. You're going to go into the iceberg. Like, that's just the bottom line there. Other than that, the DLC thing is a big thing. Also, I think, like, just knowing what we know now about audience sizes for, because that was before even the NES Classic came out.
Sure.
NES Classic wasn't until late 2016.
Right.
Like, that's a huge property, obviously Nintendo, but we saw how badly like even the PlayStation Mini did. Like, that thing just sunk to the bottom of the ocean, and that's Sony. So the fact that you put out a physical system only gets you so far if you have no games that people want. If you have no games, like at the time that the games they announced for the Chameleon were like, okay, like this might be a cute game to play, but these are not game like changes.
What was announced for the Coleco Chameleon?
Tiny Knight, Sydney Hunter was announced.
Tiny Knight was the one I was trying to remember.
There was like only like five or six, I think.
Yeah,
announced, but they were like, these will be fine games, but you're not going to have like 100,000 people saying, "I want to play this game on this console right now." It's just the reality of it, you know. So it is what it is.
I would have pushed more further into what is this actually running? What's it doing? Because you know, it wasn't obviously Android, but you know, what is this? What are you actually running these games on? What's the base? What's the development suite for it? I would have looked a lot harder into what the developers were using or what they were claiming the developers were using.
Yeah, remember they were claiming an FPGA. Remember that?
Yes.
They were claiming an FPGA on that. Yeah, because you didn't assume that this wasn't going to be worked on at all. We actually assumed like this is eventually going to come out and flop.
Right, but that's one question that I don't remember ever asking that we definitely asked a lot with the Amico is, what are these games supposedly running on? They haven't announced any sort of specs or interiors, so how can you possibly be making a game for the Chameleon?
Sure.
You know, what is it? And, you know, it just ended up being that they were running Super Nintendo ROMs off of a, you know, that's what they had. Yeah.
It was a flash card running on a mini. But, like, at that point, I think they were desperate and realized we got to show something at Toy Fair.
Right.
It was just like, that console would still not be out today. Like, if they were actually working on it, it probably still would never have come out with Mike Kennedy running it.
Oh, yeah.
It would have crashed and burned at some point. So, all right. Anything else in that?
No, that's about it.
Okay. Oh, we got some voicemails, Ian.
All right.
All
right.
So matter of factly, you go to anchor.fm/thecupodcast. You click record, hopefully a clean mic, and a nice 30-second, 20-second voicemails are my favorite. And you get through them, and hopefully you entertain us, and hopefully we all learn something, Ian. We all learn something. Mm-hmm. We become better people. Here's the first one, if I have it queued up.
This is Duffy from Louisville, Kentucky. What is the most recent game to have blown your mind? Thanks.
Kirby blew Ian's
Kirby!
Mind. Yeah. Because he can eat a car and drive
around.
Quite
literally, Kirby did. It was fun. My mind was blown. I played it high most of the weekend. It was pretty colorful. It was stupendous.
It was stupendous?
Stupendous.
Pat, Ian, this is Matt from Rochester, New York again. a question for both of you. Ian, do you have any favorite Buffalo Bills or Sabres memories from childhood, even though you're not really into sports? Pat, have you ever considered on YouTube making just a playlist of all the voicemails for the CU podcast? I like hearing that friend who checks in every week. Also, I want to just give a shout out to Andrew from Ukraine. I do hope you're doing okay over there, friend. I do like hearing from you on this voicemail as well. Thanks. Bye.
The funny thing about that is he actually left his voicemail. This is a cosmic coincidence right after Andrew left his, like in the order.
Oh, really?
I'm dead serious.
that's great. As far as like childhood memories of the sports teams, I vividly remember the Bills comeback against Houston. I mean, one of the most insane.
Is that the one they were down by like 30 points?
One of the most insane football games ever played.
92 or something?
Yeah, I'm going to have to look that one
up. That's when Warren Moon was playing, right? On the Oilers?
Let's see.
Yeah, I remember Warren Moon was at. Yeah, that was a nuts one.
I can't pull it up.
I never came. I remember being in the car and listening to it.
Yeah, I mean.
Like it was like they were down by so many points.
Yeah. So, that was crazy. And then I do remember, the comeback or the choke, depending on how you want to look at it, NFL playoff game between the Bills and the Houston Oilers played on January 3rd, 1993, featured the Bills recovering from a 32-point deficit to win in overtime.
Yes.
41-38.
I remember being in the car and listening to that, going home and watching the rest of it. I forget where my father was driving me, but like I couldn't believe
just
it.
Just an absolutely insane thing to watch. Yeah. I watched it live. It remains the largest comeback in NFL history.
Wow.
Just nuts.
That's nuts.
And then I remember my first Sabres game.
Sabres were pretty good. That Hasek was the best goalie for a long time, or one of the best goalies.
I went in like the late 80s, so it wasn't Hasek, but I just remember I remember my uncle and my dad taking me to a Sabres game against the Winnipeg Jets. We lost, but I loved it. I had a lot of fun.
Well, those were the best. The symbols they had in those sweaters were so good in the 80s and 90s.
Yeah.
The flames.
Mm-hmm.
I still want a blue sweater. I love that note. It's great. What was the question for me?
Don't recall.
Voicemails for the CU podcast.
Oh, yeah, the voicemail. Yeah, you know what? I might do a compilation of a certain caller. I might do that. I think people are clamoring for that.
Hey, Pat. Hey, Ian. This is Max calling from Edison, New Jersey.
Drive
I work at a retro video game store here in Jersey, so I was just curious to know if there are any stores either of you make it a point to visit, either when you go home or when you're out traveling. Thanks, guys.
When there was a video game con in New Jersey, I tried to get back to Digital Press because that's
sure
the home base one that I used to go to. Other than that, I don't make it a point to. I always get potentially people saying, hey, you should check out this, or offers from some people. It's like there's never time, unfortunately. It's like you have a week. So it's kind of rough to do that. What about you, Ian? Just ones you try to hit up?
Game stores? No, not really. When I do go home to Buffalo, I always make sure to go to Queen City Books. It was my childhood comic book store. The place that I went as a kid in Buffalo, Worldwide Music and Games, ceased existing in early 2000. So I haven't. Yeah, there's nothing like that for me to go home to.
Hey, guys. Jody from Rome, Georgia here. Quick two-parter. Pat, what's your favorite Unreal Tournament weapon? Ian, what's your favorite Monster Hunter weapon? Keep up the great work. Thanks.
You go first, Ian.
Double blades. I always use the two daggers.
It's two daggers?
Yeah, it's two knives. I love it.
Well, here's the thing about Unreal. You can't have a favorite weapon because you got to be competent at all of them, because they thought out this fucking thing and balanced the weapons properly. You got to know how to use every weapon. You get the slime gun, use the slime gun for certain situations. You get the flat cannon, use the flat cannon for short to medium range. The fucking 8-ball rocket launcher, that's a good one. Whatever. Sniper rifle, long distance. So, but in all seriousness, I think the Unreal is most famous for the flat cannon. There's never been another weapon like it in any first-person shooter that I know of. At least they did it first and they did it best. It's basically a glass shard shotgun that fucking tears your ass up at close range.
Nice.
And they did it in such a way that you can like almost feel the impact, like the effect of the sound, and they almost put like a little delay in. I can't explain it. People that play Unreal know this. When you hit someone up close with it, you see the jibs or gibs, whatever, and giblets. It is jibs, soft G. And they did it in such a way that you really sort of like felt the impact of the weapon up close. Secondary, you shoot the glass ball that then shatters. That's more for medium distance to longer to arc it. But that was always obviously a favorite because it's so satisfying to use that. I was an 8-ball rocket launcher expert, though. The 8-ball is a rocket launcher. You load up to, 6? for a primary, and a secondary, it tosses them and bounces them. The bounces are good to go around corners because you can angle them and bounce off, and you can, if someone's trying to hide, launch the in an arc, bounces off and hits them and explodes marvelously. The 8-ball was great. You can also lock on with the 8-ball with the target. If you had an, it would actually lock on and do a heat sinking thing a little bit. That was a little more difficult to use at short range. God, I love Unreal. Holy shit. Next question here.
Hey, Pat and Ian. This is Dave from Long Island.
Hey, Dave.
I'm wondering, at what point do you guys start to consider yourself game collectors? This is something I've thought about for a while. I never really considered myself a game collector, even though I've spent my whole life buying and playing games. So I'm not really sure where that line is, or what most people even consider it to be. But anyway, that's my question. Keep up the great work, guys.
How do you define that, Ian?
I think it's simple. I think it's defined by, if you consider yourself a game collector, you're a game collector. You could have a lot of video games, and it might just be a passive thing that you do. You're not super into the hobby and you wouldn't consider yourself a collector. Meanwhile, you could have a small collection, but it's highly curated and you consider yourself a collector. I think it's fine. You can decide that.
I think I'll go to a basic but maybe somewhat flawed premise on this one. I think you become a collector of really anything when you set out to buy something that not for its intended purpose. That's probably more of a generic way, but if you're going
to... I don't agree.
I said it could be flawed. Can I get space to talk about it, Ian?
Sure, but... Okay.
So if I'm setting out to buy games and I don't have the intent to play them, maybe I just want to display them, or I want to just have them for a curiosity's sake, I think at that point I'm now a collector. If I'm going out and I'm getting, I don't know, how do you use baseball cards? That's a bad example. If I'm getting comic books, Ian, I don't want to read them. I just want to have them. I think at that point I've become a collector. I think that's like sort of like where you sort of go off the exit ramp, at least to me.
I think that's one definition of a collector. Yeah. However, plenty of collectors play their games, read their comics, listen to their music.
No, I'm not saying they're mutually exclusive, but that's when you become a collector. Not saying you collectors don't. I'm a collector. You know, I play games. I'm saying that's when you become not just what you were before. You're a collector.
Sure.
So you're both. Give me that look. Give me the Ian side eye there. All right, we'll do a few more here.
Hello, Pat.
Hello, Ian. It's Andrew from Bath in England, a town named after the thermal springs and not the other way around. The PlayStation Vita. I picked one up the other day. Prices of the games is crazy. Small library, but man, it's pricey. What is your opinion on collecting for the PlayStation Vita? Thank you.
I think it's going to become a rich man's hobby real soon.
Really?
I mean, the games are already getting expensive. There is a lot of good stuff on the Vita, but lots and lots of that physical library is... made up of limited run stuff. And this was at a time where limited run wasn't doing open pre-orders. So you've only got what they were able to produce. The good news is a lot of those games were downloadable games. A lot of them got releases on PS3, Vita. PC releases. So a lot of those games started as digital games. I think it would be more likely that we would see some of those. There's other ways to play them is what I'm getting at. They're not locked and lost into the Vita forever. Now, I'm sure there are games that are Vita only that are, you might only. But I'm just saying a lot of that physical library stemmed from digital games that were made physical by a company like Limited Run that loves physical products. So I don't think playing the games is going to be hard, but if you actually want to collect for the system, it's going to get expensive.
Do you think Limited Run helped create some collectors for the system, being that they helped put out these games way after?
Absolutely. They didn't, it would have been an even smaller library, and I think a lot of people who physically collect would have abandoned the system a lot sooner.
It's like they had no interest in it anymore.
Hey, Pat and Ian. Dahlia from Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Milwaukee.
Love the podcast. I'll keep it short and sweet. Are there any survival horror games from any generation that made an impression on you? Or alternatively, what's your favorite scary movie? Thanks, guys.
So my favorite scary movie changes a lot, but it's not scary to me anymore. But The Thing is probably my favorite horror movie at the moment. And as far as survival horror games, Criminal Origins. What is the game? Condemned Criminal Origins on the 360. And that only exists on the 360. I don't know if there's a PC version of it. It was not on the PS3. Fantastic horror game. From a first-person perspective, there are some ranged weapons, but very few and far between. A lot of the game is hand-to-hand, and there's blocking and striking. So you have to kind of, like, confront these creatures. Like, you have to go hand-to-hand and get into it. Really great atmosphere. One of my favorite games. I love it, and it's not a super easy one to play because it was only on the 360, to my knowledge.
Resident Evil 4 is fantastic.
Sure.
That's a masterpiece. What else can you say about it? It's like a near perfect game.
That's great.
Resident Evil 4. And obviously there's action elements in it, but no, there's legitimately scary moments in that game, especially the first time you go through. It was scary when you get to the town and like all the doors fucking close, and then like they send a swarm after you, got like go in the house and fend them off. I was like, well, this is terrifying. This actually happened. And I remember that being so hard to beat that. Like, it was just like, it was manic.
And it didn't feel like a video game sequence to me because you suddenly have this, I don't know, it didn't feel super scripted because you suddenly have this entire village going after you. And while there are definitely good ways to get out of it, it was interesting to play that to me because it was kind of like there was no hand holding. It was like you just have to survive.
Yeah, that's fairly early in the game.
Yeah, it's
20 minutes or whatever.
It's like the first main part of the game.
Yeah, like that's like this is like, okay, this is for real. That's why there's no ramp up. It's like, okay, fend off like 50 guys and women coming after you.
Yep.
You know, let alone the fucking chainsaw guy is always scary. Chainsaw, you got to get that guy quick in the head. Can't shoot him in his gut. Pot of sweet in the gut. Surprise him.
Hi, Pat and Ian. It's Andrew from the UK here. With the recent announcement of the Cowabunga collection, which I'm really excited for, interested to hear what you guys think of the previous Turtles games. Obviously, the infamous NES game and some of the classics like Turtles in Time. And also would like to know who your favorite turtle is and why. Cheers, guys, and keep up the great work.
Well, Andrew, I'm not sure what this NES thing is, but on the NES, I love the original Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, I do too. It's a hard game, but I enjoy it. It's fun. I think it's interesting. I like most of the Turtles games in one way, shape, or form. I don't like the NES arcade game.
No.
We covered this. I like the Game Boy games. Pat thinks the first one's too simple. But I mean, overall, it's a great looking collection. As far as my favorite turtle, when I was younger. And in the movies, I like Donnie. I like Donnie because he's the nerd. I like him. He's good with machines. However, and this is not always a popular answer, but if we're just going based on the initial Mirage run of Turtles comics, I love Leonardo. He's badass. He's fucking awesome. I love him.
I was always team Raph. I was always a Raph guy. Sort of like the underdogish, sort of like little sarcastic personality. Always trying to prove himself, you know. I always identify with Raph more than anything. I always hated Michelangelo, even especially on the cartoons. Michelangelo was insufferable to me.
Comics made him for me too, but he's not one of my favorites.
I hated the
when he gets his cat. Shit. When he gets his cat in the comics, he gets a cat named Clunk in the comics.
Oh, they should have put that in the cartoon.
And it's amazing. But the difference is like in the cartoons, Leonardo was the leader. Because he was the annoying, naggy one. In the comics, he was the leader because he was a fucking leader. That's why I liked him.
They showed his badassery in the cartoons a little bit, at least initially. Then they watered him down.
Yeah.
I remember originally he wanted to kill Shredder in the original like miniseries. Sure. He's like, let's go finish him. And I was like, oh, yeah, you don't want to fuck with Leonardo. But then they got to water it down because kids can't take it when we can. Yeah, that always annoyed me. Let alone they never used their weapons after a certain point in time on anything. Let's slice down a chandelier to hit the foot soldiers. Like, come on. I guess they showed up slicing up robots and stuff, but like never like any. They never hit a person with a nunchuck. That was always a point. Didn't they get rid of the nunchucks in one of the cartoons? They replaced like the nunchucks with something. I'm pretty sure they did that. one of the 90s iterations because they didn't want kids to be too violent. Can we stop? Did you ever have foam nunchucks? I had a foam nunchucks. We all did in the late 80s.
Absolutely
did. It was the time of the ninja. Brought that shit to school for Halloween. Didn't get in trouble. Yeah, back in my day. All right, you want to do check in with someone else here?
Yeah.
This is what the menu screen looks like in Hungarian.
Hey, it's Tony.
This is what
Tommy doesn't know I'm recording right now, but my friends just came over. And he started showing him all the different languages for this Amico thing. This has been going on for like 45 minutes now. I mean,
this is what it looks like in Elven. This is what it looks like in Pig Latin.
Huh? I think the guys want to go get a drink now.
But I'm not finished yet.
Madonna Santissima.
This is what it looks like in Morse code.
This is what it looks like in Braille.
What? I gotta hang up now. It probably can't even record much longer.
In Canadian.
Ciao.
There's a lot of languages on that Amico.
There sure are.
I mean, I think I heard Macedonian. Cherokee. Not a lot of Cherokee speakers out there, but hey, if you speak Cherokee, the Amico's for you.
It's for you.
Macedonian.
It's not for a lot of people, but it is for you.
They're going to target the Cherokee and Macedonian audience. That's right. That. Yeah, this was funny.
That was fun.
It's a decent to you podcast.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
You only gave me a side eye once.
Only once.
That's usually...
It's about par for the course.
I usually do it twice.
All right, y'all have a good week.
Have a good one. Bye.